Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're back for part two of our discussion on the defense, and Coach Derek of All 22 Films is with us. Derek, how you doing?
Good, man. How are you? I'm glad to be back.
It is so much fun talking to this. We had a great time in part one. And I'll tell you this. I usually provide an outline, and I do call it a loose outline. We talk about everything going in all directions. The coach is on here. Lots of great stuff. Lots of rabbit holes. I highly recommend you go to it. One of the points that Derek made consistently throughout the episode was we weren't physical enough on defense. The Ravens were not, and that they were not diverse enough. We're going to talk about some pass rush metrics coming up that I think will support that. Lots of great points in there. Lots of good discussions about how long you can coach a player to have an impact on a play before that wanes. I think, you know, there's probably fundamentals you can teach that will still apply, but in terms of scheming a play, it's kind of the notion. Would it be the notion that all zone plays eventually become man plays?
Yeah, you know, that's a good comparison or you know, equivalent, you know, comparison. I think, and there's, you know, as I grew older and started to, and of course, technology as well makes it available. You see videos. Kirby Smart was one. He used to come out with all these videos that you would see on YouTube from coaching clinics that I thought did a really nice job of helping players maintain spatial awareness during the play. So I thought that could elongate or stretch out that ability to control outcomes, you know, the further into the play you go. So if you didn't listen to the first part, forgive me if I'm digressing here and you're sure what we're talking about. Basically, the idea is, you know, as coaches, you can control 3.5 seconds, 3.8, 4 seconds into the play. The further you get into the play, the less you control from an outcome standpoint. I'm thinking of Oway's inability to sack Mahomes, commensurate at the same time, Brandon Stevens having trouble matching up with Travis Kelce on the same play, ends up being a 32-yard gain. Kirby Smart was one of those guys. He came out with all these videos about spatial awareness, leverage, adapting to the play. And they were some of the situations were unsettled. We tried to use them and recreate them. You know, how much youth football and high school football, how much effect did it have? I don't know. But, you know, the Chiefs certainly, I think the longer the play went on at times last night from their offense versus our defense, the better the possible outcome was for them. Some of that is just Mahomes being able to move around and be so athletic and still retain the ability to throw the ball downfield accurately.
Well, and having Lamar Jackson, maybe the Ravens get a little bit of that too. But in either case,
oh, we get
really
a lot
encourage really encourage folks to go back to listen to this first episode. I really just appreciate the discussions anytime Derek comes on. But we'll move on now. We'll talk a little bit about the Ravens' run defense since we didn't get to that in the first half. I think the story a little bit better than the past defense. The Chiefs did not, you know, bury the Ravens on the ground, and the way it looked in this preseason, the Ravens really needed their number ones to step up and play a lot better than their twos and threes had versus the other team's twos and threes.
Yeah, we were struggling in the preseason, certainly against, you know, multiple run concepts. It wasn't just 11 personal run concepts, you know, into the boundary. There was other concepts as well. And we looked better, obviously, against the Chiefs starters with our starters on the field. And I'm not sure that it's very different from what the Chiefs winning formula looks like. I wish I had time to sit and go look at, you know, every Chiefs win in the last 4 years, not the entire game, I don't want to punish myself that way, but just be able to look at the stats. Hey, here's a win. What's the rushing output? Here's a win. What's the rushing output? My suspicion is that what we saw last night from a Chiefs rushing output is pretty much in line with what they get in a lot of their wins. What was it, 20 for 72, 74?
20 for 72. Yeah. So, and that included a kneel at the end, which you can include or not include. But right. I think here there's two telling statistics in terms of stopping the run. The first is they only gave the Chiefs 3 first downs running the football. That is a very big statistic.
That's so great.
I'm sorry, four. But in against the Eagles, they allowed a very similar yards per rush, 3.8 in that game, but they allowed 13 first downs in that game. It's a very low variance, but mm-hmm. Very effective run game that the Eagles put together. Kansas City in this game, they had the one reverse to Worthy, and you mentioned that the play was wide open, didn't take Xavier Worthy to score, but their long run on 19 other carries was 5 yards.
Yeah, absolutely. I felt like the Eagles and some a lot of the preseason this year, and even the Eagles last year, 2 years in a row, I feel like the Eagles did a great job running the ball out of 11 personnel against our defense. One with Mike McDonald, one with Zach Orr as the DC. They were a lot. There were a lot of second and threes, second and twos. Some of which was RPOs. It was a pass completed on first down. There's a second and three. Okay, you only gained 4 yards or 5 yards, but it gained a first down. Mm-hmm. The Chiefs didn't appear to have as many. You had the Worthy reverse. You had the 32-yard for a touchdown. They had a 32-yard catch to Kelsey. We had the Worthy touchdown on the blown coverage that mm-hmm. we talked about a lot. So you had some big plays. I do think there is, and certainly they had some drops, don't get me wrong, but I do think that, and after watching the film, there's more good football being played on defense than maybe we thought at certain times. We particularly in the red zone, but we mentioned it many times in the last video, and I've talked about it on my channel. In the last 12 or 14 hours between the 20s, we really struggled with the run game. Defending the pass. My apologies. Some of it's RPOs, at least two, in my opinion, where Mahomes is reading it post snap. So there's some situations where maybe he could have handed it off, but we overplayed it. And so he went to the pass game, the slant on the backside. So I think it's a good first game for us, a good test. With dealing with Mahomes, I'm glad that we faced him. I'm not glad that we lost, but I look for our defense to improve from the standpoint. They have to allowing 7 yards per play. If you take out those three big plays that I mentioned, I would be interested to see what our yards per play was. The big plays count, don't get me wrong, but I think it would speak to the level of quality of the defense, maybe a little bit more than my harsh evaluations have been. Like I said, this Friday afternoon or evening.
Take out the three longest plays. So three longest plays were 99 yards. And if I take those out, they had 47 plays remaining. Yep. And they gained, let's see, how many yards did they gain?
250.
It'd be 254 over 47. So we wouldn't be talking about five yards. Yeah.
5-4, 5-3. So, and we're at 7-1, I think, for the game. So, so a little bit more in line with what we would like to see, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you should win a football game where you allow 5.4 yards per play to the Chiefs. That's for sure.
Yeah.
It's nice to win the battle 74-50, but that wasn't enough in its own. If we can, I know we're going to spend a ton of time talking about the pass rush because you were eager to talk about it earlier. Let's jump right into that. I think there were some good things that came from the Ravens pass rush this game, and I hate to be an apologist first, but I'm going to do it. They knocked Mahomes down on 7 occasions. Some of them quite late, by the way. So while they only got called for the one roughing the passer penalty, which was the high hit on Matabike, which I think was an automatic pretty much.
I understand people were upset about it. Oh, it was a soft call. Okay, he didn't make violent contact with the helmet. Okay, I understand that, but it's contact with the helmet. They're going to call it. I agree. I don't see any problem with them making that penalty, that flag out, putting that flag on the field.
I thought the other times there was contact, there probably were an occasion or two where it could have been called and wasn't. So I thought from that perspective, not an issue that I would point to it.
We had some violent collisions with Mahomes. I mean, I understand people want to, there's a large segment. We need to go pay a pass rusher, all these things or whatever. We had some violent collisions with Mahomes. Matabike and Van Noy ran a pick stunt. Matabike, it's the incompletion, I believe, to Xavier Worthy or Darius Washington's near interception. Matabike, mm-hmm. if I'm remembering the play correctly, knocks Mahomes to the ground. Owe on the incompletion to Juju. Owe, and I think that one's probably close to late, beats the left tackle, which he did a couple of times. And that one's close to me, and the ref is right there. I thought I was like, man, this looks like the second step to me could have been called. So I think the pass rush was a little more effective than people want to admit. There's times on that format, and I think this speaks to the predictability of which four players are rushing. Mahomes can kind of look at it and know, okay, I've got an open B gap here pre-snap. If there's no game, no stunt, no twist, that's probably going to be my escape lane, because that defensive end over there is going to go to the high side, or outside linebacker, or whatever. He's going to go to the high side, outside rush, and that's going to be where I'm going to be able to move to, particularly if it's to his right. Not that he doesn't scramble to his left and do a great job of it at times. The more variability we provide in which four rush, the better, in my opinion, over the course of the year.
I'm going to go ahead and say there's another facet to that I would think is that you're not only are you denying him rush lanes to escape, and that's important. You know, Mahomes can make plays with his legs, and he can get you a first down 2-3 times a game if he has to do it. He won't do it 8 times a game like Lamar Jackson can, but he can do it 2 or 3 times a game. What you're also denying him, and Mahomes is a shorter guy, is throwing lanes. You want to twist and stun a little bit and get him make it a little harder for him to get the ball to his crossing receiver. Get some color in his face that way. Yeah. Right. All right, let's talk about some specific deception elements, since you really are starting with this. We'll jump right to that first. There are only 4 off-ball blitzes in the game: 2 singles, 1 double, 0.14 per play. By the way, it was reasonably effective in a very small sample size at 4.0 yards per play, 12 yards on 3 plays. So I'm not saying that's any be all end all, but given that all the other Chiefs passing numbers are astronomical when you look how they were effective, you got to look at that and say maybe there's something there. But that speaks to your point that you made earlier on the first show about not showing the same 4 rushers. They just didn't come with the slot blitz, for example, or from a Roquan blitz really at all. I think Roquan might have blitzed 1 time the entire game. Simpson twice. Yeah, it's Roquan once, Simpson twice, and Humphrey once off the right side on a ball that was overthrown just out of the reach of a huge yak play, by the way.
Yeah, and I also think too, there's a couple of related points here. We spoke to this in the first show or the first half. Hamilton, it's not just, you know, Hamilton can make plays, he can cover, he can play anywhere, he's very versatile. He is nuclear as a blitzer at times.
Yeah.
And so this may turn into a situation in 2024 where we want him closer to the line of scrimmage in a dime role, occasionally as the nickel to the field, because the payoff for him as a blitzer at times is this. Our D tackles are generally not going to be able to tackle or corral Patrick Mahomes. He could step to one side and then reverse field. That's not going to happen with Kyle Hamilton. We don't want to have to allocate Kyle Hamilton as a blitzer 8 or 10 times in order to win an AFC playoff game in Kansas City or in Baltimore for that matter. But if we get a lot of evidence that some of our other guys can't corral him, we should have finished the play, Owe's missed sack, and then the 32-yard completion to Kelsey. We may have to look at some dime stuff with Hamilton on passing downs and utilizing him as a blitzer with other really good coverage guys on the field. It's not that Arthur Millett or maybe Ardarius Washington or other guys aren't potentially effective as blitzers, but I think they're effective because of the scheme that's been created before. I think Kyle Hamilton is independently or organically effective as a blitzer more so than those other guys, because he's bigger, faster, stronger, more talented. And hell, a couple of pass rush times in his first 2 years, you know, you've seen him swim or rip. Like an edge defender. So I'm interested in that dynamic, varying the rush, like you said, off-ball blitzers, if you want to call it that. And Hamilton is possibly a force multiplier there.
By the way, I do include off-ball blitzes are someone who comes off the slot or further out. Yeah. So even if he's right on ball and press coverage, he'd be an off-ball blitzer there. Let's go to stunts. 1 single, 1 double the entire game. 2 plays, 2 yards, 1.0 yards per play.
Very vanilla, again, I thought, right?
Yeah. I mean, just didn't stunt much at all. And this is something that the Ravens did very effectively last year. When I see that few stunts in an NFL game, one of the things, well, it's a couple things are true. They're not calling stunts, and they've also told the linemen, don't stunt or don't call your own stunts on the field. A lot of people don't know that, but a lot of stunts are called on field by players who know what they're doing, and they're allowed to do it if no blitz is coming. They're allowed to make that change. You know, I've heard Calais Campbell talk about this. There were no blitzes called basically this entire game. There were a bunch of pass plays where there could have been stunts called. So obviously there had to be a moratorium on those in this game. So Orr had to tell them, don't do this for it to end up in this manner. At least I would.
Yeah, very vanilla. It's only one game, so small sample size, you know, which you talked about, you know, a couple other elements, small sample size. One game is a small sample size. We're going to get 16 more games, I think. And many people have said this on my channel and in our Discord. Hey, look, you know, 2022, after four games with Mike McDonald, if you stop right there, if you stop the movie there and the movie's over, it ain't good. You know, it's not good. Part of that is related to players that are healthy and maybe not playing well. Some things on the offensive side, too. But we got a small sample size. I think we're going to get better. I think the film, as we talked about earlier, pulls you back a little bit closer to a grounded position, pulls you back closer to zero. I'm still in the negatives. You know, I'm still in the negatives overall. But, the film has pulled me back closer to zero. I would say mid to late third quarter as far as watching every single play. You know, when you try to produce content, you got to cut it up and produce it and then talk over it. So I still believe in what we're doing. Absolutely. I would like to see a little bit more variability in the rush post snap, who's rushing, you know, equaling or similar to the pre-snap looks like we talked about in the first show, dime, different versions of nickel. I think that'll be, you know, what helps us confuse or delay quarterbacks processing post-snap and allow the pass rush to get there, because we have talent there. I don't care what someone's perspective is. Ojabo, Owe are talented. Van Noy just gave us, you know, nine and a half sacks, whatever. Matabike had a sack last night. I think two other legitimate quarterback hits and then the penalty. I believe he had two quarterback hits and then the third being the penalty. And the half sack, split sack with Simpson on the first possession. So I think we've got commensurate enough talent there at the defensive line position. I do not agree with people that are, you know, overly concerned about the name of the player who's out there. I don't give a damn who gets the sack. I think that scheme and variability, along with talent, which I think we have enough of, can help us generate sacks as well.
Well, yeah, I tell you why I was excited with Matabike last night. I thought he was generating a lot of first pressure opportunities. And Matabike last year had a fantastic cleanup year.
Fantastic.
Oh, fantastic. And this year it was this, you know, last night it was mostly first pressures that he was getting. And, you know, he was depending on players like Owe and Clowney to produce a lot of those last year. And, you know, even like Jones as a fellow pocket compressor and whatnot. Jones, by the way, I thought had a fabulous game. We'll talk about
played
that a little
great.
Later. Yeah. But totally unappreciated because he didn't get the statistical credit for some things as they played through the game. But I thought was terrific. But I'm excited about Matabike. He was the Ravens' most effective pass rusher as I scored it. Had contributions to five pressure events. Two more that were wiped out by flag. One was his own roughing the passer, and the other was that offsetting fouls on the run play.
Oh, yeah.
That run play or pass play, whatever it was. You know the play I'm talking about.
So, I thought he played well. He played, simplistically, we used to say Matabike played downhill. He played downhill. He looked like he was on a 7-degree decline, and the offensive lineman lined up against him was on a 7-degree incline, which would obviously create an advantage for him. That's what it looked like. He benefited from one or maybe two pick stunts by the edge defenders. One of them was actually, it was two. One was the incompletion that Darius Washington almost picked off to our Xavier Worthy. And the other was the incompletion to Juju that I talked about earlier as well. So he's great on those. You end up looping and he's got great timing and awareness on it. And then he's extremely violent when it's a one-on-one situation. Mm-hmm. We're paying a lot of money for him, but man, I think he's worth it. I think he's really worth it. And so we can't just forget about him when we talk about edge rushers, because that's what a lot of Ravens fans are doing in the offseason and even right now. We need an edge rusher. Well, we have a guy on the interior who's going to give us 8-10 sacks potentially in a normal year. Last year was quite abnormal, the cleanup sacks to which you alluded. So I'm not concerned about the pass rush. I thought there was a lot of good going on. Did Mahomes get out of there at times? Sure. But he's getting rid of the ball quick. Some of the RPOs they ran, that's the design of it. That's what the modern quarterback wants to do. Get rid of the ball quick, force your defensive line to get off and exert some energy such that it's a three-step concept or even a no-step concept. And we're not exerting any energy as an offensive lineman because we know, hey, I don't really have to do much here because the ball's going to be out. I just got to make sure your hands don't get up and get in the throwing lane. So I'm not as concerned at all. I thought what did we finish with? Two sacks total?
Two. Yeah, one S0 and the other S-10 with Ajabo and Jones.
Yeah.
Kind five quarterback hits. Seven quarterback hits.
So, okay. All right.
So it's five others you're adding to that. And there was another QH wiped out by flag. I don't know if that's in most people's counting. That was the Matabike RTP. So it was a good night for putting Mahomes on the ground. It was a really good night for it.
And I would say of those, it almost reminded me of certain boxers. I know you're a boxing guy. I know certain boxers that land 30 punches per round, but only four of them are really substantial. This almost reminded me of the boxer who lands eight punches in a round, but five of them are big shots.
Yeah.
And we were violent with him. In fact, two of them, I saw the throw and my eyes stayed on Mahomes. You know, the camera moves, the broadcast, and my eyes stayed on Mahomes because I was like, oh, wow, that was a shot. That's the way we've got to play with him or any quarterback. It's not trying to hurt the dude. It's just we're trying to negatively impact your effectiveness over the course of a four quarter game. And, getting a big hit on you in the first quarter, second quarter, or whenever does that. And so we've got to create more of those situations, I think, we got to create more of those situations from a scheme standpoint, as opposed to just relying on organic four-man rushes. So, that would be a minor complaint for me at this point.
All right. I got two things I want to go through here that are specific metric stuff. Ample time, space, ball out quick, and pressure. So way to divide the opportunity set for the quarterback. Some of it's provided by the defense. Some of it is chosen by the offense, particularly on the ball out quick plays. But Patrick Mahomes was given ample time and space on just seven plays all night, 24% of the total dropbacks. That's a little lower than normal. I think that's certainly a good thing when you can keep him in that range. The problem is he got 111 yards on those seven plays, 15.9 yards per play. There was a sack. The S0 was on that. He left a clean pocket late and got taken down at the line of scrimmage. So it wasn't all big plays, but there were a lot of big plays within that group. I'll just move on. The ball out quick. 12 times, 41%. When the number gets that high, it's definitely an indication that the quarterback is highly conscious of getting the ball to the outside. And obviously we saw it not only to the outside because they ran lots of screen passes and were pretty damn effective at it, even with missing some plays. But they also ran a lot of slants and shorter routes to the inside of the field. Mm-hmm. So, we've seen that kind of number in terms of ball out quick percentage from Joe Burrow as well. Now, on those plays, 107 yards and 8.9 yards per pass play. That's way higher than normal for ball out quick. Ball out quick usually involves, particularly for the Ravens defense, a fair amount of degree of control for the defense. I think last year they averaged slightly under six or maybe exactly 6 yards per play allowed on such ball out quick throws. It's really the reason why they're able to take care of the Cincinnati Bengals with regularity is that they control that short passing game, and Burrow's afraid to throw the ball deep because he doesn't have the arm strength to really challenge a too high look. That was a big deal for me. And the third thing before I give you a chance to respond to all this, pressure, 10 plays, 34%, not a bad percentage at all, given how quickly Mahomes gets rid of the ball, 61 yards and 6.1 yards per play. That's an excellent passing number for that as well. So all three categories, Mahomes was way above average in terms of how he dealt with his opportunity set and got above average results. He did have a sack in there. It was thrown in. They had the one turnover, the interception that was significant, but very rare that you'd be up at 6.1 yards per pass play. And even one turnover in 10 plays ain't too bad for being under pressure.
Yeah. So we're not wrong for having complaints and being concerned with the quality of what we saw out there. I think it's, a little bit of it. We're talking about free releases we are discussing pass rush and Mahomes, I know, but somewhat related to it is consistently free releases for inside receivers, slot receivers or tight ends. A complaint of mine dating back to last year's AFC Championship game. I mentioned that in the first half of the video as well. That would be some of the concerns I would have, that we're now facing the same team again in the very next game, separated by 8 months at this point, and we still were not collisioning receivers at all. particularly guys that were on the interior alignment position, you know, mostly Kelce attached to or close to the left tackle or the right tackle. I think the Ravens have the physical talent to defend this team better. And so that's where my complaints come from. We saw some evidence of it last year after the first three possessions. You know, we got gashed last year in the AFC Championship game, the first three possessions. I get people talking about, oh, we held Mahomes to 17 points. Go watch the first three possessions and tell me that defense was prepared. You're lying if you think they were. And to me, there is an element of that exists last night as well. They attacked us in very particular positions. Interior routes with Rashee Rice, isolated mostly against inside linebackers in space. I think it's our job to create a little bit more leverage and support for those guys. As it relates to the pass rush, I like the talent that we have out there. Ojabo's win against the left tackle, clean. Mm-hmm. And in fact, he missed with his swipe. The left tackle retracted his hands, and Ojabo won around the edge. That sets up other moves. There was a spin move Ojabo had against the right tackle that I thought was impressive. It didn't impact the play because I think Mahomes got rid of the ball quick on that one out to the right-hand side. Owe looked like he was shot out of a cannon twice. One time, one play. I think it's Ojabo's sack. It's really weird. Ojabo's sack. Ojabo actually gets the slowest get-off on that play, mm-hmm. and Owe is – always like 2 yards up the field compared to him on the other side. So it's just, you know, if we get a healthy Owe, I have zero concern with a healthy Owe, a healthy Van Noy, and a healthy Ojabo. I know that, you know, at least in two of those instances, that's a question mark for some people. I get it. But I think those guys have enough talent to get the job done. I thought that they, some of Owe's reps against the right tackle, I thought were unproductive. Other than Ojabo's spin move against him, I thought that Taylor at times did a good job. I don't know what his numbers look like. You could perhaps say maybe that's because he was allowed to do certain things that our offensive line were not allowed to do if you wanted to.
Yeah, let's not get into that. It's just, it's so counterproductive. But, you know, I will just say it's not wrong. But the Ravens had Michael Orr a few years ago, and the Steelers fans went ape about this in terms of, and he had a magician's kind of quality about him. And Jawan Taylor is no magician. He rocks backward in the way you really try and train out of your offensive alignment.
Yes.
But he rocks backward in a way that it should make it obvious to that linesman. It's not a matter of a split second. That rocking action is something they should really be picking up on. But Michael Orr was off often one or two ticks before because he would anticipate the cadence. And rather than waiting to watch the ball and get a response to that. And it was very effective for him because even when he was one and two ticks, and that's, I'm talking clicks ahead on the video, which is between 0.03 and 0.06 seconds, he was still getting away with it. In fact, he got away with one where he was seven clicks ahead, 0.23 seconds before. So it's not like the Ravens have never gotten this either. Michael Orr, you know, became the false start king at some point, but he had a lot of leeway, and the Pittsburgh fans really never let up forget it.
I was, you know, from an individual standpoint for those guys on the outside, I didn't think Van Noy had many wins out there. I don't chart it, you know, or I don't have access to some of the metric data that you got to pay for. I'm not going to do that, but I didn't think Van Noy had organic wins. I thought we had some organic wins from Owe and Ojabo. You know, I think creating more versus multiple looks and multiple post snap rushes, whether it's 4-man or 5-man pressures, I think would only help those guys become more efficient in some of their rushes. So, you know, we have some work to do. I think that's obvious, but I don't think it was so deficient from a pass rush standpoint, like so many people are painting it as, just because the output on the other end was crappy. There was other issues on the other end, meaning the coverage element, that I think are independent of what we saw up front at times.
Yeah. And in this game, I mean, I just think Mahomes was so exceptionally good at taking advantage of what was presented to him in terms of mismatch opportunities. And I'm not trying to blame anyone in particular. We went over it a long spot, and I don't want to do it again from the first show, whether that's the coach's fault for putting him in that position and we should have adapted and we should have this or that. But the fact of the matter was Mahomes was right on target, a lot of pinpoint passes, and the only inside linebacker really made a play on the football. Not talking about Roquan, you know, picking up that wounded duck of a floating flotation device that he got. But the only guy who made a play on the football was Simpson. And he made two, in fact, during the game. But you know, Harrison got beat on wheel route that didn't get hit to him. He got beat on other routes. He missed tackles. We had Roquan getting beat pretty consistently in coverage as well. So Mahomes knew how to shred those inside linebackers in terms of what he was presented with.
It's a mismatch. I mean, it's just a tactical mismatch. There's no one should expect our inside linebackers to cover that. The people who do expect that are people who really, to be blunt, don't understand football, you know, for real.
I don't disagree with that comment. There are a limited number of tools in the shed that Orr has to work with. And so, I mean, you know, you can say, well, what this really guy needs is a backup. Well, I've got a shovel and a trowel here, he's limited. So anyway, let's get back to the matter at hand. I do want to go through the number of pass rushers that they use, because this is another element of not a lot of versatility, but they only used 4 5-man pass rushers in the whole game. 4 plays, 24 yards, 6.0 per play. With 4 or 3, the results were pretty much identical. 3, they had 1 play for 10 yards, and 4, they had 25 plays for 247. So that was 9.9 yards per play, with 2 sacks and a turnover rolled into that. I would say across the board, Mahomes did exceptionally well, regardless of what the Ravens presented him in terms of numbers. The one thing he did have a little bit more trouble with was deceptive elements, which really speaks to some of the points you're making about if we'd shown him a little bit different four, if we'd shown him more color and giving him a little more stunt difficulty. And I think it's a matter of taking away throwing lanes in that case, but it's also 100%. A matter of taking away running lanes. Yeah.
No, I totally agree. I think the return on investment for trying to get sacks, or even, I don't want to say you're not trying to get pressure, so I'm not going to go that far, but the return on investment for trying to get sacks against Mahomes, I don't think is worth it. And from a tactical standpoint, I think other teams mentioned them before, you know, the Bengals, I think they realized and recognized that. I'm not saying, oh, you have to drop 8 in coverage all the time. It's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that your overall goal for a particular play, if it is to sack Patrick Mahomes, the percent chance that you're going to do that is incredibly low versus the percent chance that you know, an incomplete pass, or like you just kind of spoke to a moment ago, get in a passing lane, disrupt a passing lane, make him get to his second or third read. We did not do that consistently enough for my taste at all. And you know, we're going to get better, I suspect. Number one. Number two, you know, we have the talent and coaches to get better. The expectation is that we will do so. We got to see more versatility. You know, I think we got the Raiders coming in next, right? So we're going to face a different, don't get me wrong, we're going to face a different quality quarterback. But Oh, by the way, that's a guy that came here last year and beat us. You know, if correct me if I'm wrong, right? Gardner Minshew. Mm-hmm. They haven't played the game yet, but you know, he came here last year and beat us, so I'm not going to minimize that. And in fact, he gets rid of the ball quick at times and runs a lot of RPOs. So there are some similarities in certain things, not with Gardner Minshew and Patrick Mahomes, but with the style of play that that he'll do, getting rid of the ball quick, short guy. You want to disrupt passing lanes. He's certainly more capable of being sacked. I think it's a good opportunity for us to show a little bit more versatility, maybe be a little bit more aggressive at times. I think, and you mentioned this earlier, we're talking about pass rush, but the coverage guys on the outside did well in some of the situations that they had to. We had a blown coverage that resulted in a touchdown. Stevens gets beat on an unsettled situation. Other than that, I wasn't aware of corners that looked bad for us, and we certainly have a lot of depth and talent there. So I trust the guys on the back end for us to be a little bit more versatile up front. That's what I'm looking for this week and in the future. Be a little bit more versatile. Help us out up front, and create a little bit more opportunity to get to the quarterback and maybe, you know, create a pressure.
We'll see how other teams try and force it when their receiver is outside as more of a vertical threat, or even a two-way hitch and go guy. The Ravens outside corner talent right now looks incredibly deep to me. It looks at a level like I've never seen on this team before.
Yeah.
And for one thing, I've never really been a JAD fan. I don't think he would look, after all this time in the National Football League, which has amounted to what, about 2 games for him that he's ever played, because he's never healthy. He still can't find the football in the air. That's true in practice.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's true. It was true all summer at camp. I mean, he can run with somebody, and if that scares an opposing quarterback, great. But his moves are all reactionary to the football and the hands of the receiver because he's just not capable of finding the football in the air. The reason there, I believe, is he can't put his hand on the opposing receiver and turn and look and feel safe about not losing that receiver.
Right. Yeah.
It's very frustrating. But I'll tell you what. Mahomes didn't challenge him here because he had bigger fish to fry in the middle of the field. And maybe it really was great coverage from JD, but I think it there's some positive portent I'm going to choose to take from that. On the other side, we saw Wiggins was fantastic in the preseason. So we fully expect him to be a number three corner. I was actually pissed, by the way, want to get your opinion on this, on JD starting over Wiggins in this game.
You mean getting more time?
Well, just the fact that I think Wiggins played more snaps, but he started the game. I mean, you know, it's like, why? What is this? Rookie's got to earn it crapola. And what more could Wiggins do than what he did in that preseason against Philadelphia, against the other teams he played? He had basically a perfect preseason.
Yeah, he's impressive. Yeah. He's got the complete package, and you know, the college film was just fun to watch.
Yeah.
The competitiveness I continue to reflect and think on. I think it's North Carolina's running back, a big, strong guy, breaks down the right sideline. I think it's Wiggins forces a fumble on the one.
Punches down the goal line, yep.
Yeah, or maybe the three-inch line. So it was really cool. And so I think that speaks to his competitiveness and his speed and closing ability. I think we're blessed, first of all, at corner. I guess for outside corners, JAD would be number four. Is that right?
That's how I would say it. And then, you know, we haven't even unwrapped the Christmas present that is TJ Tampa. I mean, he's barely been on the field at camp. There's nothing I can tell you about the guy other than they gave up two consecutive touchdowns in 11-on-11 towards, it might have been even 7-on-7, towards the end of camp when he finally got back on the field and played just a little bit. There's nothing I can tell you about the guy.
Right.
You know, so everything I know about is from college.
So somewhat similar to JAD from the standpoint of, you know, we don't really have much. And when we saw JAD the first time in 2022, I mean, my God, he was put in a really bad position, obviously.
Yeah.
I was surprised that we got those guys on the field, as much as we did. I was glad that Wiggins got on the field. Part of me would like to see how that actually happens. You know, getting back to our overall point, I think an overarching theme that you and I have talked about here and you've brought up many times in other shows is we may have to get into a dime look to reflect the talent that we've got in the secondary. There's nothing wrong with that. If you had three incredibly talented edge rushers,
you'd find a way
on third and seven. You could find a way to get all three of them on the field. That may be, you know, we may have to do that. And so I think, you know, Zach Orr's got an opportunity and the defensive staff have got an opportunity to move in other directions at certain times. I think they seem willing because of how many different pre-snap looks they used and post-snap. I think it sounds like you and I are on the same page. Post-snap, we'd like to see a little bit more variability and unpredictability. Mm-hmm. If we're scared, to do those things against Mahomes now in week one, we would certainly be scared to do those things in the playoffs. So for me, and I'm going to compare this to Steve Spagnuolo, sorry for going off on a tangent, I think Steve Spagnuolo right now is looking back on the second half and saying, I should have brought more pressure. I think he's saying, I am not comfortable just rushing four or three plus one. Some of them are three plus one. Some of them are three and a spy. I think there's a slight difference, but I think he's looking back now and saying, I wish we had brought more pressure. Make him beat us with someone else. Just get the ball out of his hands. I mean, I made the comparison. I don't even know what show it was on. He reminds me, Lamar, of the point guards that can score. And so just get the ball out of his hands. You know, blitz him, get the ball out of his hands, make someone else make a play. And how am I relating this to our defense? I think Spagnuolo and those guys have retained the ability to surprise us with large-scale rushes, potentially later in the year, because they were so conservative, I think, in the second half of this game. And it didn't work out. And so I don't know that we did that. I don't know that we established anything that we – maybe we did. Maybe that was the strategy. Maybe the strategy was we're going to be a little bit more vanilla this game and we'll show more when we see them the second time. So, you know, it's possible. But we're talking about a long time between now and then. I think we have to kind of be willing to give Spagnuolo that credit, although I do criticize him here. I think he was way too passive with his rush against Lamar. And I said this in a video that I put out earlier today. I think his staff came in on Friday and said, we made a tactical mistake in the second half. We have all these DBs and talented fast dudes. We should have brought people, get the ball out of his hands, force him to throw it. So, you know, both defensive coordinators and staffs, I think, you know, have some things that maybe they would have done differently. We focus on the Ravens. And so that's why we're here, you know, doing this at almost 1 a.m.
Right. I'm with you that there's going to be things that and being a great defensive coordinator, always you have to embrace self-effacement. I'm not sure if that's the correct term for this, but you have to embrace the introspection of what did you do wrong in this game. You can't say, oh, damn it, this is the one game where he really beat us and it was, you know, this one is on him. It'll be different the next time, even if we do the exact same thing. You better be looking at that.
Brutal reality with yourself for me and the people that I've been blessed enough to be around is the only way for a defensive coordinator to if someone else is your harshest critic as a defensive coordinator, I think you're already one foot out the door getting fired. I think you've got to be your harshest critic. What that means about your personality in the real world, I don't know. But as far as a football coach on the field, I think you've got to be. So Spagnuolo and those guys and Zach Orr and those guys, I'm sure on Friday today, earlier today, have done that introspection and have probably come up with other plans for the future.
We have talked about a lot of players on this show, but I want to open it up right now to you and say, if there's any player you'd like to talk about individually, I always put in, we're going to spend, you know, 20 minutes on this and you know, we're going to have four or five each, but by this time of the show, we've talked about a lot of the players individually, not all of them. Who would you like to discuss? Maybe somebody we haven't talked about so far that either had a good game or didn't do what you'd expect.
I think part of it, as far as your schedule goes, is me, because I'm, you know, Scotch Irish. So I'm good at disrupting people. So, you know, that's just my nature. But Hamilton and Simpson, I think absent being able to watch again, I'm mid late third quarter as far as watching the whole game film over repeatedly. I didn't think Hamilton looked as fast. It didn't look like he had as much burst. I'm not saying, oh, he's lost a step. I just mean, we seem to be more reactionary instead of attacking. I'd like to see him in a more attacking role, given the talent level that we have in other coverage guys. I'm not talking about Eddie Jackson and Marcus Williams. I would kind of put those guys in the same vein, even though I think, you know, at this point, 2024, we're glad that we have Marcus Williams. And you know, we signed Eddie Jackson to be whatever he's going to be. I think we have other coverage players. Arthur Millett or Darius Washington will start inside out. And then Stevens, Wiggins, Humphrey on the outside. I feel like Hamilton is maybe looking for a role. He almost reminds me of a great actor right now after one game, short, small sample size. He almost reminds me of a great actor who's hired to do a movie, but nobody knows what role he's going to play. And, you know, I think he could do any one of the main character roles, possibly, you know, not an inside linebacker, but I think the cool thing about Hamilton is he can do any of those things on any given play. He can vacillate between those roles. And it looks like from pre-snap stuff that you described earlier, it looks like that's kind of where Zach Orr might be going, possibly. So I think he's going to play better. We're going to get, you know, monster games from Kyle Hamilton, and we're going to get a whole bunch of really good games. Unfortunately, last night, you know, was not one of them. Mm-hmm. Simpson, I think, and the preseason, I think, kind of shows this as well. And last night just confirms it. We're now talking about four games in 2024. Simpson has this unique ability to almost adapt in the middle of the play because of his athleticism and size and strength. A couple of those plays he made last night, I thought, were pretty unique. The differential between defending Rashee Rice in the slot was quite obvious, like you pointed out, with him and Malik Harrison, and even, you know, Roquan Smith.
Let me respond on Simpson first, because I really did want to talk about him as well. But he's a guy who, the best thing I can probably say about him is he's incredibly far ahead of where Patrick Queen is at the same point in his career. So I'm not talking about Patrick Queen's first year, because there wouldn't be any comparison at all about that between where Simpson is now and where Patrick Queen was at that point. I'm talking about Queen's second year. And there had been a little bit of progress, and there'd also been some backsliding in terms of Queen. You know, we'd still seen a lot of problems with missed tackles and whatnot. I think Simpson is just flies around. He makes plays in coverage, which is something that Queen did not do. And he can trigger and come downhill as well. We saw him make a couple plays as a pass rusher in this game too. One quarterback hit. I'm trying to think if he had one more. Yeah, he had part of the sack. He had a half of the sack zero. So yeah. Anyway, I just thought he's so far ahead of where Queen was at the same time.
He's fun to watch. I mean, absent the result of the game, to sit and watch, I think he's 23, but I might be wrong. To sit and watch him, he's 23. Of course, you know, Queen was very young when he came to Baltimore. He's very young. But to your point, you know, 2021, I think it's week 4 or 5, the Chargers come to Baltimore. You know, Queen didn't start. Josh Bynes is inserted into the lineup, played a whale of a game that day. And Queen, you know, was able to get on the field that day, but not as much. I'm sure you recall, or, you know, you seem to have a great knowledge of the history and the trajectory or arc of a player's career. There was a moment there in 2021 where I thought Queen was a guy who was almost being phased out. And I think he certainly starts to play better, you know, week 4, week 5, week 6, 2021, basically as soon as Josh Bynes is inserted into the starting lineup. In the 2022, you know, pretty much the same arc in some ways, although I think he was playing a lot better than people give him credit for before Roquan showed up. It ain't just, hey, Roquan showed up and fixed all these problems for him. That's BS. Patrick Queen played his butt off, you know, in 2022 the whole season. He has some issues occasionally, sure, but I agree with you completely. Simpson's more versatile. Simpson covered tight ends in the preseason as a testing phase or trial run, if you will. Let's see if he can do this, because my guess is, my suspicion, he participates in those drills in practice, independent of other inside linebackers. They're not lining up Roquan Smith or Malik Harrison head up on a tight end who's in a slot position and saying, cover him on 3rd and 7. They did that with Trenton Simpson in the preseason at least 4 times, and 2 of the times, excellent coverage because of his athleticism, his length, his experience as a safety. So for me, you know, my discussion point of Hamilton and Simpson has been different, of course, because the expectation level. But I'm excited about what Simpson offers versatility wise and ability to adapt during the play. That sack early on, him and Roquan are reading the running back, and I call it banjo. Some people call it tandem, whatever. The running back releases to my side. I take him, and you, the other guy, you drop to the low hole, essentially, you know, middle of the field, in between the hashes, 6 to 8 yards deep, maybe 10, depending on down and distance. And then if the quarterback escapes, I go get him. I become the plus one. You know, if he escapes, or in this case, it resulted in a sack. That is something that I want to be careful about the way I say this. I don't want to be disparaging of a dude that, like, I respect. I love Patrick Queen's unselfishness, but 2020, for him to banjo or tandem read with the other inside linebacker and then adapt during the play, I'm not sure that he would have been capable of doing that in that situation. Simpson did that in his first start. Well, he didn't start
against Pittsburgh last year.
This year he did that last night against the Chiefs, you know, his first real game that counts. I thought it was impressive. I thought it was an impressive performance. I'm glad we have him. And I totally agree with you. It's exciting to see all the things he's capable of, maybe the physicality was supposed to be a weakness. I didn't see that last night. I thought he played well against the run.
It's not the first thing I would bring up, certainly, though the issue of him not being on the field on rundowns is interesting, to say the least, because they certainly give up coverage ability when he's not in there. I think, you know, it really, I mean, the cornucopia of coverage talent that Zach Orr has to work with right now is remarkable. And unfortunately, it won't last. People will start to get hurt and it'll start to get stretched and it'll be a little thinner than it is right now at the best. But it will still be, I think, pretty damn good. What's incredible about this year and last year, though, this year, all about the talent. And to me, so far, it's less about the scheme. Now, we'll see how that plays out. They just got picked apart by Patrick Mahomes in a game where their inside linebackers were really no match for the Chiefs' speed. And, you know, you can point to physicality as a problem or adaptability of the coaches. I'm not gonna try and point to exactly where that occurred. I'll just say they weren't up to the challenge. Yeah, they weren't.
Yeah, we don't know exactly. We don't know.
But last year, it was very much about scheme. It was inferior underneath talent, really being helped by the back end split field guys and the scheme that McDonald brought. The matchup zones, the playing it, all of the things that McDonald brought to it. I hope that the Ravens are going to be able to demonstrate that that's not lost, which should lead to some unbelievable stifling pass offense output at some points this year. It's incredible to come off a game where they just got ripped apart and say, I still think that'll happen.
No, totally. I totally agree. That's the impression that I have, you know, after watching the film, most of it, producing two defensive videos, you know, in preparation for this, like we talked about earlier. The overall level of talent that we have is pretty sick. There's going to be injuries, like you said. Injuries to key guys could dent mm-hmm. or change some of that dynamic. We have more. I think that's the part that's frustrating still. I hate to spin it back towards negative, but I think that's the part that's frustrating, is that we recognize that there is so much talent and there is so much versatility. And nonetheless, we came out being so vanilla here after what I think was a very vanilla preseason as well. Those games are in the past and, you know, they didn't count. In some ways, they were trial runs. So we got to see a little bit more in week two against the Raiders, I think, to feel a little more comfortable. I do feel comfortable with what we have, but we've got some growing to do between now and the Raiders game at home, in my opinion, on the defensive side. And the threats that the Raiders bring are different. That's a must-win game. It's an absolute must-win game. So yep. whatever you've got that's an issue or that you're trying to trial run, for me, you need answers now. So I think that you've got to come out there and put your best foot forward. My suspicion is we'll probably see a little bit more aggression early and at times probably test our outside coverage guys in terms of leaving them, you know, pretty much one-on-one and bringing a little bit more heat.
All right. Well, we're certainly looking forward to that. I've got two questions in the mailbag I want to toss out here, and we're running out of time, so we're going to try and get to these. The first one is from Zach Serpa-Weinberg. Thanks, Zach, for sending this in. Looked like they had rotations going, at least early on, between Simpson Harrison and J.A.D. Wiggins. We talked about both. Those feel very counterproductive to me, probably in terms of present value, but especially for understanding future value. Do you see rotating... Okay, so let me get to the same point of this. Yeah, do you see rotating as worthwhile? It's an excellent question, really well put. Do I see rotating? Absolutely. I see value from rotation because one of the things, you know, first of all, rotating an outside corner, that's a position where you have a lot of injuries and you want to know what you have.
Right. Okay?
They don't have TJ Tampa available yet. They're going to try and make determinations in practice of who can actually play. But one of the things that has betrayed them in recent years is trying to project who JAD is by his practice time.
Yeah, and you know, I reflect back 2022 when the fourth quarter against the Dolphins, a collapse. But yep. we played a couple of coverages that we could not play with the guys that we had on the field in that moment. Marcus Peters, JAD. They were on the field at corner at a particular time. You don't – now, yes, practice, like you said, you could – determine or find out those things from practice. But if you can put a guy in a situation in a game and find out, okay, we cannot play this coverage later on down the line, if there is an injury, you already know, what coverages you cannot play, what needs to be possibly removed from your coverage umbrella, number one. Number two, first of all, the question's well-worded. It's a cool question. I think I think both short-term and long-term, it is actually beneficial. There are plays that will stick out, Malik Harrison missing tackles, and people will point to that as Trenton Simpson should be in the game. Well, we only get to exist in one universe. However, there is an alternate timeline such that Trenton Simpson is put in the same exact situation and misses the tackle. He's a clearly more better athlete than Malik Harrison and has some open field tackles from the preseason. So that's fine if people want to say that. I think Trenton Simpson makes that tackle. The Ravens last year under Mike McDonald and the incredible defensive staff they had, they thought it was worthwhile to put Malik Harrison on the field many times. And so I don't adjudge or be too critical of Zach Orr for having him on the field last night either in certain rotations. I think there's a little bit of long-term, a lot of long-term benefit, maybe less in the short term with being unpredictable for the offense. Is it possible that Mahomes and those guys said, hey, from film study, hey, look, whenever Harrison's on the field, he's going to be the boundary side outside linebacker, or he's going to be the boundary side inside linebacker. So when he's on the field, we got these seven play calls to try to attack him. That's absolutely possible.
I really don't believe that that would have been true. I would have bet a lot of money we would not have seen Malik Harrison at inside linebacker in this game. I think they thought it would be a complete surprise for him to be out there. But I think as soon as they saw him on the field, I think they were going after him.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is the level of preparation that exists there is such that if they go back, well, we now have it with the NFL Pro, we can literally go search Malik Harrison on the field. If I were to do that right now, you know, go through it, my suspicion is that 90% of his alignments would be into the boundary, probably more, either as a boundary side edge defender or as a boundary side inside linebacker who's, you know, walked back, creating a quote 4-3 look. So the Chiefs would know where he's going to be. And so what I'm saying is they would have six or seven plays built in. Okay, Malik Harrison's on. Actually, with Patrick Mahomes, I don't think Reed probably even needs to communicate it to him pre-snap. They have so much experience together at this point.
Right.
Mahomes would know, okay, here he is, and I've got the memory recall. Here's my seven plays. Let me check the one that I can get him isolated. Absolutely true. Now, hold on a second. Here's the other possibility. The other possibility is the Ravens and their coaching staff would be aware of something like that. They are. And say, we want to live with that. We want to limit we want to elicit your calls. Chiefs offensive staff, we want to elicit your calls when we put him on the field. Now, they wouldn't say that to Malik Harrison, the Ravens coach. They wouldn't say, hey, we're going to put you out here as bait and we're going to see what they call. But it's entirely possible that they do that to see what the Chiefs are going to call. And I think there's something to be said for that. I haven't done the research and I don't have time to go into that, even just from last night's game. But I think it's an element to the game that we as fans, myself included, sometimes forget in the moment when Malik Harrison misses a tackle against Pacheco or when he gets beat, you know, to the boundary. We didn't get beat on outside pass concepts because Mahomes attacked us at other strategic points, inside linebacker, boundary side outside linebacker. So you know, at some point in time, we've got to push the envelope a little bit and say, okay, you're going to have to beat us somewhere else, and we're going to try to figure out ways to force you to happen. If that means that we're one-on-one with Xavier Worthy or Rashee Rice down the field, so be it. I trust our guys.
Okay. I'm going back to last year, and I'm saying there was a fair amount of information out there about Malik Harrison as a Sam linebacker because he dropped the cover a lot. So it is possible that they had recollections from that, but Harrison has spent, you know, he basically reshaped his body entirely to be an outside linebacker for last mm-hmm. season. When it went mm-hmm. 259 pounds. I think he's down to 250 now, but you know, the Ravens have now made it very clear to the rest of the league, I think that they are depending on him to fill two positions, that he's kind of the backup Mike. I think that's how I see it. A backup two down Mike to Roquan and I would not say that he'll continue necessarily as the alternating will. I think after the first game, everything remains on the table in terms of what they might do between dime, weak side linebacker rotation, Simpson only as a three down guy, maybe even some other solution you come with. Everything's on the table right now because the game didn't work out.
Yeah, just so your listeners are tracking and can relate them, you know, what you're referring to, I refer it to boundary side inside linebacker. That's the will.
Well, yeah.
Ball in the middle of the, and I know you know that I'm relating it to your listeners. Ball in the middle of the field occurs so infrequently that oftentimes coaches refer to, you know, boundary side inside linebacker Will, field side inside linebacker Mike. Some defenses use Will as an edge defender. So, you know, so you get into terminology stuff. So that's why for me, when I started to create content, I refer to boundary side inside linebacker, you know, field side, in, as opposed to Mike and Will. But, you know, you're not wrong, obviously. I just wanted to make sure your listeners understood it. I do think that we have a lot of options there. Roquan would be the guy that, you know, we cannot afford to go down, because now we're trying to replace the level of athleticism and intelligence to the field, the wide side. And that's extremely difficult to do. We saw with a young guy, we saw that with, you know, Patrick Queen, when he was thrust into that role early in his career, and it, you know, it didn't work.
Wasn't up to it. Yeah. The other thing about Roquan, that's very much like CJ Mosley when he's here. CJ Mosley took a ton of criticism, completely undeserved, for his difficulties in coverage. And I'm using difficulties with air quotes here. Okay.
Agreed.
Just a guy who was far better than any reasonable expectation for the position, but is also forced into a continual coverage role by the fact that guys around him weren't as good. And he did get a little relief from Zach Orr himself when he was as a player. But he was asked to do a lot of things, particularly after Orr left, that were completely incremental in terms of his coverage responsibilities.
Yeah, my own ability to understand whatever limited understanding I have right now, to even get to this point for inside linebacker coverages, reads, reaction, responses, took a long time. And, you know, I don't mean this to be haughty or look down upon people who have not invested as much time. I think there's a lot of people who do not understand a lot of the reactions on social media and various, even people that talk on television, really don't understand coverages at all. And in fact, from an inside linebacker standpoint, let me rephrase, let me make sure I add that caveat, that they don't understand what the guy's responsible for in particular areas of the field, particular coverages, nor have any idea what the read could be, meaning how long the player has to look at something before they understand where they have to go, and then be able to correctly adjudge that. Shane Mosley, you know, Mosley with the Ravens, I agree totally, was criticized unjustly in a lot of ways. And he still continued to be an extremely effective linebacker for the Jets. I think Roquan's pretty much in the same boat.
You know, is interesting that I don't think Mosley completely shook the label with the Ravens until his last regular season play as a Raven, which was the interception that clinched the AFC North against Cleveland in that in 2018. Unbelievable, you know, just ability for people to overlook what's good. But I agree with
microwave society, right?
I can't even wait for the end of the microwave. They have to pull it out with 3 seconds left on there. But you're right. Yes, it's give it to me now. I find that particularly frustrating in terms of personnel decisions too, and how you build a franchise, because we could go on a lot of hours. But listen to Friday Morning GM if you want to hear that, because that's another detail. I'm not telling you to listen to it. I'm telling the listeners.
I wish I had time, man. I wish I had time.
All right. Well, Derek, I think we're going to have to call it there for the night, man. But always fantastic, man. Whenever I get you on, I hope I get you on maybe once or twice more this season, if you've got time for it. And, you know, we'll get you on once for the offense, talk about a different set of things, maybe again for the defense later in the year that will be a new look at things. And tell folks again where they can talk to you online, maybe send you a message if they want to have a conversation or join your Discord or whatever, and where they can find your work.
I absolutely think we'll be having me or your other guests for you. I'll be having different quality conversations in terms of the output performance of the Ravens defense probably soon, but over the course of the year, look, we're going to play good defense here. We're going to play good defense. That's the standard. So I don't have any fear or worry about that. I do wish and get a little angry when we don't have a better plan against the same team that we lost to 8 months ago with pretty much the same offense. Sure, they got Xavier Worthy. Okay, I think he got three targets and the ball on one reverse. I did not see anything from the preseason from him either that looked like he was going to be a high target guy. I don't think the nature of this offense has changed. So that is my concern with that. But in any case, you know, for what you were asking me, You know, I'm all 22 films on YouTube and Twitter, and that's about all I can handle, along with, like I said earlier, the, you know, the Discord that I operate for Ravens fans. It's a private, you know, community that really has benefited me as well. You know, from a selfish standpoint, they help me shape and guide the content, and we argue in a mature, professional sense about results of plays, and we actually share film in the Discord so that myself and other people can discuss it, talk about it. And I haven't actually ever revealed this before. I actually run the Discord to help other people create content. That, I'll be honest with you, that's a very weird thing for people to probably hear. When I started to do this myself, I watched Sip to Tally and EA, and I was like, man, I love this stuff. I wish I had the ability to do it. It took me about a year and a half to finally step in, and I made plenty of mistakes. So when I started the Discord, the first six people that joined, I said, you know, I want to help you if you want to do something like this. And I think from that, we've had three people go on to do it. I won't necessarily name names, but because I don't know that they even put their stuff out publicly, for consumption, but it's one of the things that I like to do is help people who are trying to step into something that maybe I've tried to do before. So in any case, that's where you can find me: YouTube, Twitter, and Discord. And by all means, if people had a question for me or something they think I misinterpreted or misevaluated, you know, feel free to send me a message on Twitter. My email is whatever the hell it is. I think it's all22footballfilms @gmail.com, but it's in my YouTube description. I'll maybe provide it to you, Ken. You can link it up in a more professional manner than I just gave it.
All right. Really appreciate it. You know, you brought up an interesting point there, and it's one that I want to make to the listeners as well. I've occasionally in the past gotten requests to be an intern to you know, study film with me and whatnot. What I'll say is, you know, your time is very valuable out there, but what I'm happy to help you with, if you're interested in this kind of thing, is to help you with the modeling on a football analysis question. Okay. Cause that's the thing where I think we got a lot of people. And Derek is among them that do a great job with the film. Okay, I think if you have interest in the mathematical modeling component of it, there actually is a fairly good community of those as well. But I'm happy to help. My background's in modeling as an actuary, and I'd be happy to help with that. I'm sure it's something, by the way, Coach could be very good at as well, because I know you're a math guy in real life, and I'm interested in hearing people that want to do your own study and maybe don't know how to go about it or start it.
I think in my experience, like something people trying to step into something that exposes themselves to large scale feedback loops, quick feedback loops. And what I mean is you put something out there and you get instant feedback. This is BS. You're wrong with this. I actually really like that stuff. But in any case, I think for most people who are possibly thinking about or are going to attempt to move into that, it has to be pick up and play. And that's the genius of the Discord. Not me. I just happened to walk into it. It's pick up and play, meaning Ken can post a play on Friday night at 1:22 a.m. I can respond to it Sunday morning at 8 a.m. And the conversation doesn't have to occur.
Right.
That conversation can occur over the course of months in an individual thread. You know, beyond just Discord, there's other apps and other places that people can communicate that are secure. And for me, I've really lucked, blessed, whatever you want to call it, into having this Discord community, because, you know, it's been something that conversations have flowed and people have come to support my content and support what I try to do in a way that I never would have anticipated. And so, you know, when it did begin with my intentions, which was, I want to help other people do this if they wish. Nobody really took me up on the offer, you know, because they thought, oh, we're going to be meeting on Thursday night at 8 o'clock. And no, you know, you're going to be communicating back and forth at your own leisure. And that's what I mean when I say pick up and play. So for your listeners for you or me or anybody else, like pick up and play would be the perfect thing, like a book. You know, nobody reads books nowadays, I guess, but you know, you pick up a book and you read it when you want to. And that for me is what I like to offer people. Cause at heart, I think I'm a teacher.
All right. Let me offer one more thing, which is going forward content on the schedule, what it will be per week. There's two defensive and then two offensive shows. The next show out is generally Know Your Foe. We have one last thing with Slava. We have the matchup shows with Frazier, and we have Friday Morning GM coming out all on filmstudybaltimore.com. Please give us a look and tell that other friend about the channel if you would. Derek, thanks again for coming on.
Hey, man, appreciate it. Thank you for bringing me on.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.